the program shows that I'm doing this. Gerald had a great deal to do with it. I got into it and decided I was not intelligent enough to handle the situation. So I asked someone that knows more than me to help me. But I'm very pleased to be here with you today. I hope some of the comments will be beneficial. Before I make any comments of that nature, I'd first like to just suggest to you that in no way am I disparaging the National Cotton Council or USDA. I would tell you as a grower that the first thing you do is support the National Cotton Council full heart and full energy. That's your organization. It's extremely important to you. I may disagree with them from time to time, but I'm minor compared to what they're doing. Likewise, I do, and some people that follow me somewhat closely know that I'm always arguing with USDA. They are fine people and do a fine job and are well-trained. I just choose to disagree with them sometime, and probably more so with respect to India than anything else. Jim Steadman, I did jump the gun here. The Cotton Exchange did make a decision about 10 days ago, and I failed to call you, that they, this particular year, they wanted to bypass the Cotton Marketer of the Year. They did that. They want to debate some more about it. They lost to their former president, who had been president forever, who had started that award and had done everything in the world on behalf of the cotton grower. Joe O'Neill passed away, and he had certainly been my mentor and the mentor of other people in the Cotton Exchange. Just actually wanted to take a break in the year of his demise. So that's what happened to us, and I owed Jim Steadman a phone call 10 days or 2 weeks ago. So you can just write me down as not calling you. But thank you. Now, getting back into cotton, you know, where are we and how did we get here? Well, what are we, 72 cents, 73 cents? In the nearby, we had been at 94 cents. We advised pricing at least three-quarters of your crop at 94 cents. Maybe 1/20th or 1/15th of the people did that, maybe not. We had another very strong advisory point when it fell to 91 cents. And I know we got some good takers at 91 cents, but here we are at 72 cents, 73 cents. Basis the nearby, and we're still finding that there's a lot of cotton that's not been priced. Possibly the most discouraging thing that we're seeing is the cotton that is being sold to merchants currently, is being sold on call. So what farmers do, what growers typically do, and that makes you a grower, you accept speculation, you accept risk. That means you're betting on the price being higher. At the same time, we're seeing mills buy like the Dickens, fixed price at a very rapid rate, pace, and they're doing that because they tend to think that either A, the price is going to go up, or B, that they know that they can lock in a substantial profit at this level. So the bet is whether or not we're going higher and lower, and that's, of course, that's always the bet. As we move through this, I tend to hope that I'm going to be entirely wrong. I hope that I'm going to be entirely wrong. I hope that some of Gerald's comments, John's comments, I hope y'all are going to be entirely correct. In other words, I'm a little bit bearish, so when I speak, you may want to get up and walk out. Gerald, bring us up to date and start telling us what's going on in the world.
Well, I think you have to look at the world economy right now. I mean, it seems to be taking center stage right now, although the evidence of a slowing has been taking place really for the last 12 to 18 months. If we look at, I borrowed these charts from the International Monetary Fund. No sense in reinventing the wheel here, but industrial production is a little lower. Manufacturing PMI, new orders are below the growth rate of a year ago. You've got the trade tensions and the tariff talks. March of 18, you know, announced a 25% tariff on steel, 10% tariff on aluminum. I was a little bit surprised that they didn't include that one of the first things that in January of 2018 was announced a 30% tariff on solar panels. That didn't really get anybody's goat, but you know, steel and aluminum starts bothering people. June, you know, the Chinese retaliated, and then in September, you know, they announced some more, some additional tariffs on additional $200 billion. Currently, we're in some kind of a holding pattern, if you will, to see if we can't get some things figured out. But clearly, that's having some impact on the world situation at large. You know, rates have been gradually increasing. The central banks have the Federal Reserve has raised rates. I think the last increase came about maybe prematurely. They probably shouldn't have raised it this last time around. And all indications are that they're going to hold it at current levels right now. At least that's what people are pushing for. You know, when you go from basically zero to 2%, 2.5%, or 2.25%, wherever we're sitting at, you know, we're still at very, very low levels from a historical level, from a historical perspective, but just the fact that we were going up was bothering folks. As a result, you know, the dollar index has increased. You look at the Argentinian peso, it's down 50%. You know, Turkish lira is down significantly. So all these things are creating some uncertainty in the world. You know, higher borrowing costs because of the increase in the Federal Reserve rate. And as a result, and maybe more importantly, as people are looking at these rate increases, you look at the yield curve. For most people, the yield curve means nothing. To people who are trying to predict whether or not we're going to really have a slowdown or not, though, the yield curve means everything. And typically what they're looking at is a 2-year versus a 10-year treasury. 2014, that differential was 150 basis points. By end of 2018, it was 19 basis points. It's not inverted yet, but that's what people are looking for. And typically, an inverted yield curve is not necessarily a good thing for the economy. It can go inverted without triggering a recession, and people are thinking that this time it's certainly going to head that way. This time it's different. But every post-war recession has been preceded by an inverted yield curve, so it doesn't have to trigger a recession. But if we have one, you know, this is kind of the canary in the coal mine. You know, we look at last year asset classes. Everything lost last year. You know, the only thing that was higher was the U.S. dollar index up 4.6%. Bonds were up about 2%. Everything else was down. Commodities in general were down about 14%. Cotton year over year was down 8.3%. If we look at the March 18 contract at the end of December 2017. We look at the March 19 contract at the end of December 2018. We're down 8.3%. It's kind of, but it doesn't tell the whole story. As we rallied during the middle part of this year, you know, the nearby contract got up to as high as 96.50 in June. Now we're down here to the low has been 70.65 here recently. So really, from high to low, over the nearby contract during 2018 lost almost 27%. So, okay, you know, the world economy is slowing, so what? You know, well, cotton is an industrial commodity, and when things slow down, people don't have as much money in their pocketbook, and they don't buy as many clothes out there, and things just sort of slow down a little bit. So that's why, you know, it does impact cotton. OA, you want to talk a little bit about the ending stocks here?
Well, not really, but I will since you asked me. We set this up to be kind of a Siskel and Ebert presentation, but Gerald's not slowing down enough for me to challenge him. He says something is wrong. So I'll let him challenge me. But ending stocks, we began to look at the picture and felt that we would be in very good shape. And still our numbers look like we're going to be in decent shape. We'll be within range. That's also based on our export figure of 15 million bales. The crop size may come down some. There's a lot of speculation that we're U.S. crop would be down 100,000 bales. And so if it is, I wouldn't be surprised. I would literally not be surprised if it's down a couple of 100,000 bales. We continued with the weather that's going on in this 10% of the crop or so, and many places of the south, southwest, that we could still lose some more weight out there. But We'll be 19 plus million bales, and looking at the idea of a upper 4 million bale carryover, all of a sudden to me it becomes a 5.2 or 5.3. Because we're looking at exports of 15 million bales, I have grave concerns that we'll get on this later, that exports may be closer to 12 million bales, which would say that USDA has a $3 million bale overestimate currently with exports. But you know the numbers probably better than I do, and you know that we can catch up. It's just we've got to find a market for this cotton, Gerald.
3 million bales, that's, I would argue, maybe a little bit lower, but that's quite pretty significant. As we walk through the numbers, you know, how do we get to 4.4? You know, that's really not so comfortable. You know, so obviously, as OA says, you know, the USDA export estimate is in jeopardy. U.S. export sales to date, well, that's sort of funny. We haven't had any export sales data for as of tomorrow, the last 3 weeks. But as of the last report that we had, we were only about 200,000 bales behind this time a year ago. And if you look at accumulated sales as we were working through the system here, I have a little bit of a crude trend line there that I kind of drew that by freehand. It doesn't indicate that we're going to get to the 15.5 million running bales that we need to sell in order to ship 15 million statistical bales. Personally, when I look at when I come up with an export estimate, and OA, you may do it a little bit differently, I assume that we're only going to ship about 94% of what we sell. Right now, USDA is carrying running bale estimate for exports of 14,560,000 running bales. That equates to 15 million statistical bales. So we need to sell about 1 million more bales in running bales to ship enough to get to 15 million. OA?
Well, I don't know that we'd do it different, where we just look at things differently, and we've talked about that, of course. The biggest problem I'm having, and I'll spend more time on it later on, is the China situation, the tariff situation. I think personally, John, I think we as an industry, and this is my personal opinion, we as an industry are missing the significance of the China tariff situation, and we are missing the major significance of the long-term changes in the cotton industry that this tariff situation has thrown upon us. Initially, I was very tariff, I was very pro-tariff. I guess now I have to say I'm just pro-tariff. I'm having trouble with it. I'm debating it. Friends of mine are debating it with me and telling me I still need to be as strong pro-tariff as I have been. But the problem is, if I just say this one time, when we put the tariffs on and China countermanded with a tariff on U.S. cotton, we, the U.S. government, and this has caused me great pain, the U.S. government did not put a tariff on Chinese, imported from China, a tariff on textile and apparel goods. So as a consequence, we continue to import textile and apparel goods from China at the rate of multi-billion dollars a month. Every bit of this cotton that we are importing in textile and apparel goods is non-U.S. grown cotton. So we have become heavy importers of non-U.S. produced cotton. So certainly China has no reason to really respond to the tariff that they put on U.S. cotton. It's not impacting them. The fact they rather like it. We are the ones getting hurt, and it was simply because they outbid us. They outdid us. They slicked us. They got around their tariff by us allowing U.S. non-U.S. cotton to come in the United States, and we're bringing in million bales of it now. So, Gerald, that's my big difference, and that's.
Oh wait, have you heard from anybody at all that's ever said why we never put a tariff on clothing?
Well, I have opinions on that. fact, but they're probably not well founded, so I guess I need to leave them alone. Other than to say, as much as cotton thinks it has a seat at the tariff table, cotton has absolutely no seat at the table, and we are yet to recognize that. And it's hard for us to recognize, and as we get further and further down the road, we are going to see that the cotton market that we grew up with, that we knew forever, is no longer the cotton market, and China is not going to be that big of a market in the terms that it has been in the past. I'll have some other thoughts on that. Well, I guess I'll expose them now. What we're going to see, we're seeing more and more Chinese textile activity moving to other southeastern Asian states and other Asian countries. Now, a lot of it is still Chinese money. They're invested in those textile industry, and they'll be happy to use non-U.S. cotton there. But in China, per se, China has recently made deals with the country of Brazil. Brazil is increasing its infrastructure, its export infrastructure, specifically for China. China has signed formal agreements with Brazil to take more Brazilian cotton. We'll know China will take all the Australian they can get. We also know that following the U.S. lead, Brazil basically took all the land away from the Brazilian Indians. They have reconstituted that land, and now it's farmland. They've cleared it. They have an area almost as big, not quite, and I'm stretching it a bit, but they have an area as large as our field crop production area here in the United States. That their plans are to put cotton and soybeans on this land. So not only will they begin to wreck the soybean market somewhat, they'll keep the cotton market in turmoil. In the world, according to Brazil and what their plans are, the world's going to start coming to Brazil for cotton instead of the U.S. That bothers me a great deal, actually, because I tend to see that they will have an advantage. You want me to say more?
let's save some more for the end.
All right.
Okay. China and Turkey both contribute mightily to the U.S. export estimate. Of course, Turkish lira has been a real problem this year. In China, we all know what's going on there, but over the past several years, they've really contributed mightily. Over the last 5 years alone, they've averaged about 3.8 million bales a year in total U.S. shipments. These are in running bales, averaging about 32% of our total exports. So far this year, we've committed 2 million bales, or only about 20% of total U.S. exports of cotton to China and to Turkey. For them to maintain their share, and for us to get to a 15 million bale number, we need to sell at least another million bales to those two countries combined, without, of course, any more cancellations. And if we don't, who's out there to pick up the slack? Well, Pakistan, India, Vietnam, and Indonesia are good candidates. Pakistan, because their crop is a little bit smaller than last year. Indian crop is certainly smaller this year. They haven't bought. I don't think India has come fully to the table yet, but they will. Vietnam and Indonesia both are out there. But just to get to where they were a year ago, these four countries need to buy at least another 2 million bales of cotton. So can they buy an additional million bales? Probably, if the Indian situation is as bad as everyone claims, there's probably room there for at least another half a million bales worth of U.S. exports. As a result, anything further on those?
Well, I would say that you can kind of stick a pin in my bubble of doom to some degree. The Indian crop currently carried by USDA, I believe, at 27.5 million bales. I would not be surprised at all to see it drop to 25.5, 2 million below the current USDA estimate. John pointed out the drought that they face, plus, more importantly, in my opinion, the pinky problem that they've had. I actually have my estimate of the Indian figure only at 25 million bales, and that actually comes down month after month. I know you and I talked to some of the same people in India, but I've bought into what they've told me, and I also, the one thing they've not done as of yet that makes me wonder about my own projection is that they have not failed to block exports to Pakistan. They sell to Pakistan routinely in big numbers to Pakistan, but when India gets in has production problems, with a drop of a hat, they cancel any export sales to Pakistan. I actually think that's coming, and as part of that, not only that, I think we will pick up more exports to India, as you suggested. I think I picked up from what you said a 500,000 bales. I'm not throwing out, giving up yet that we may pick up 1 million bales there. Plus, we may well pick up more bales exported to Pakistan. As part of my gloom and doom, nonetheless, not only Brazil, but Pakistan has followed the same line that China followed with Brazil. Pakistan now has formal agreements to import cotton from China. Now, to what extent that's going to be cotton that, John, as I took you were implying, or I inferred from what you said, that's the merry-go-round. If you lose this market, then you'll gain this market. And that's to some degree true. But at the same time, I am so torn with respect to the Chinese situation that they're basically telling us in any form, shape, or fashion, whether it be cotton, that we need to understand that they are now the big boy on the block. We are not. Not only are we not, we're not the big boy on the block anymore with respect to cotton. They are, and they partnered with Brazil. And between the two of them, if they continue their strong ties with Asia, they can, with Australia, they can be the big boy on the block. And I'm starting to think we are being too dependent on quote-unquote government taking care of us. The Chinese have never had anybody challenge them successfully. We had Bush challenged them, Obama challenged them. We had the WTO riff with Brazil. We gave in. We gave in on everything. We didn't enforce anything. The Chinese have broken essentially every, and I'm not exaggerating, they have broken essentially every WTO agreement they've had. Nobody's done a single thing about it. Everybody has accepted it. They're used to us giving in. So what's wrong with them fighting right now? They just assume automatically we're going to give in. But I'm thinking with respect to the tariff that the current administration has followed through with, that they mean that there's some teeth in this thing, and we'll just have to see. But in the meantime, the soybean grower is hurting, and the cotton grower is hurting. Again, I've was one of the very first ones, to my knowledge, that said, hey, man, this tariff's great. I love it. It's going to help cotton a great deal. But they sidetracked us with respect to the import of us continuing to import Chinese textile goods.
Currently, USDA is estimating a decline of world stocks down to 73 million bales at the end of this crop year. That's assuming, of course, that their December estimates don't change much the next time they release estimates, which not really sure when that's going to be. You know, world production, any potential changes the next time they do release some numbers? Well, the National Bureau of Statistics in China came out with a 28 million bale estimate in China versus, and when you look at their area estimate, they were projecting a new record yield, which is really funny because one of the reasons the market rallied so much as it did in the middle of May was because of this horrible conditions in Xinjiang province. They thought the crop was going to be severely damaged over there, and yet somehow they end up making a record production or record yield. I don't know if USDA will, typically they do accept the NBS numbers. Maybe they won't this time. India. Oh, he's got them down 2 million bales. I've shown them down 1.5 million right now, but certainly could be down a little further. The United States, plus or minus 200,000, probably going to lean toward the negative side of that. So I think we'll finally end up somewhere around 118 million bales for this crop year. World consumption is currently estimated 125.6 million bales. That's actually come down as we've moved through the season. Question is will the USDA move it down any further? Right now, you know, we're at a trend. We're slightly above trend, which is sitting around 122 million bales. This trend line moves up about 1 million for a year right now. And typically, it may not be, it's not real clear on this thing, but typically when you move above or below trend, you tend to stay there for some time. So what I would expect us to stay above trend as we move forward. That doesn't necessarily mean we're going to go higher. We'll just stay above the trend line. U.S. plantings for this next year, carrying about 14.2 million acres combined. You know, 5.5 percentage point increase in the Delta, slight increase in the Southeast, Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas down, far west down about 10% on upland, and we'll be up slightly in Pima. Oh, Wayne, I've had plenty of discussions here, and why don't you just start off with your point counterpoint here, Oh, Wayne?
Well, I wrote in my last weekly report that we could expect to see 64 cents on the December 2019 contract. Had a couple of phone calls from friends of mine suggesting that they talked to a mutual friend of ours and wanted to know what I was smoking. I still contend that I'm the only guy that ever went to Vietnam and didn't smoke, didn't take heroin or smoke marijuana, but maybe I've started now. They thought I was ridiculous with saying that, 64 cents. I hope I am. I don't mind telling you. But I based it on a 24 million bale crop. And actually, a 24 million bale crop this coming season is extremely easy to reach. Ed Jernigan was one of those that received that phone call from Jim Nunn and with wearing his orange socks in Tennessee that said, oh, he's smoking something. And Ed said, you know, I thought I agreed with him, and then I went through the numbers, and you got a 24 million bale crop. I got a 26 million bale crop. Now, how do you get to 26 million bales? One, first, you keep the Southeast, and Jim Steadman, cotton grower. I saw y'all's numbers yesterday, and I was amazed, to say the least. It's great to have different opinions. I don't want to say something you didn't say. I think you were in like 13.7 million acres plus or minus, a little bit more than that maybe, but not much. And we're carrying something like, as Gerald has, 14.2, could be 14.3, could be 14.1. But I looked at I looked at cotton grower numbers, and I noticed a big increase in the south, in the mid-south, which we had that same increase in the mid-south. I noticed a little increase in the southeast, and I bought into that increase in the southeast. The far west was not changed much, and I bought into that. Our big difference was in the state of Texas, where I believe the cotton grower was down as much as 500,000 acres. Again, I'm not sure, but that absolutely floored me. The southwest doesn't have an alternative. Now, they can grow some sorghum. They can grow a little corn, but it's generally going to be sorghum. And I just don't see any of those guys increasing sorghum. Why would they with the tariff? Why would they with the price? Why would they with the yields that the seed companies gave growers this year out of West Texas? Why would they with the soil moisture that we see coming up for next year? Why would they, given the La Nina that's coming, that suggest, the long-range weather people suggest that Texas, West Texas, will get ideal moisture at the exact right time for next year's crop. You boo-hoo long-range weather people. I don't. That's just the difference in a lot of people and myself. I think they've been incredibly accurate given what they do. I've got to keep that 500-acre difference still in Texas. Look at the coast, the upper coast, lower coast, South Texas, Houston area, Corpus Christi area. The phenomenal yield they came up with, and this is an entirely different subject trying to reconcile the USDA numbers and how they got there, but they did get there. And with that kind of yield, I don't know why the Corpus area doesn't turn to cotton next year. It won't, but I think it'll come close. So that acreage has to stay for me. And you take the seed companies, the new varieties they're coming out, you take no hurricane in Georgia, you take the mid-south states not being flooded week after week. You look at the planned increase in Arkansas, you look at the planned increase in Mississippi, you look at the entire disappointment that both the Southeast and the Mid-South have had with soybeans. You put all these factors together, and it just makes sense that that acreage is going to be there. The odds are you don't have a second, a third-year hurricane in Georgia. Gosh, maybe they end up getting stuck twice. But to me, that crop can easily be where Jernigan said, 26-08 instead of 24. That's an outlier, no question, but it's very doable. Jim, I think y'all's number had Georgia down a couple of 100,000 or so, you know, or a little bit, maybe just 100,000. And I can see why potentially that could occur because everybody's discouraged about the bad hurricane they had. But I think that's going to turn, particularly unless cotton prices drop a little further to the downside here between now and the 1st of March, or probably the last week or two in February, and or soybean prices just balloon. I know you like the soybean chart, and that's a reason to like bean acreage increasing, or i.e. not
declining,
not as much. But anyway, that's where we are.
people might ask, well, why aren't you up higher in Oklahoma, Kansas, and Texas? And maybe we will be. But if you sit there and you go back over time, just look at Oklahoma and Texas combined. You know, that combined those two states, it's the highest acreage since 1980. 2018 was the highest since 1955. So in this year, for 2019, if you include Kansas in that, 2019 would be the largest acreage in those combined three states since 1954. So I didn't see a lot of room for upside in Texas. Just because, you know, people still do rotate crops around a little bit. And then Memphis Eastern, those acres can rise a lot too, and I'm hearing some big increases particularly in the Delta. And I started looking at insurance prices. February insurance prices for cotton, corn, and soybeans, and nothing for this year suggested that there should be really a big shift unless guys just want to change. OA mentioned that, to me that guys were just disgusted with soybeans in the Mid-South, and that may very well be true. I guess I'm also hearing that to some extent for growers to want to say, listen, I'm going to reduce my beans, I'm going to go back to cotton, you know, there is some there is some capacity problems, I think, in both in terms of harvesting and ginning that may keep some of that enthusiasm down a little bit. So not calling for as big of an increase in the Delta as expected. Just a couple of things to point out, though, at, you wonder if people respond to these ratios. Look in 2011, cotton was $1.22, the insurance price. Corn was $6.01, soybeans were $13.50. The ratio was fairly low, though, between corn, cotton, and soybean cotton. We picked up 4 million acres. Same, you go to the following year, prices fell a little bit, but soybeans still maintain a pretty good ratio. We lost some cotton acres. Something might stand out to you, goes, well, look at 2016, insurance prices were $59.66. The corn cotton ratio looked very inviting. Soybean cotton ratio looked very inviting. We ended up increasing acres. Well, there was a very positive outlook in February of 2018 for the for cotton, and I think people were responding to that. Here's a soybean chart. I looked at that and I thought, this has probably got one of the better charts between soybean, cotton, and corn, and so there's a potential for soybeans. In spite of all the tariff talk, in spite of the big crop out here, I don't know what's going on in soybeans. I'm not a soybean person, but from a technical perspective, it's got the best looking chart here. So we may see a rally into the planting time. U.S. production estimate, going forward, only got a 7% abandonment carrying forward so far this for the new crop year, primarily because of the weather situation in Texas, the moisture situation, and this is a 23 million bale crop. Certainly, to get to 24 or 26, you're going to need some more acres someplace or better yield, and maybe all of those things certainly could happen. I used December yield estimates to put this number together that USDA used for their respective states. So there was nothing 5-year, 3-year, you know, nothing magical. I just plugged in those numbers. But anyway, 23 million bale crop going forward. You want to back up?
No, let's look at our time frame. If you can find it pretty quick, can we skip, unless you have
sure.
Can we skip to the not so comfortable ending stocks?
Let's do that.
For the U.S. and then
okay.
To the world ending stocks.
Okay. Anyway, using a 17 million bale export estimate for this next year, 3.3 domestic. You know, projecting ending stocks to climb to 7.1 million bales when we get to the end of 2019. That compares to a long-run average of 5.5 million bales. And, you know, we've only been above 7 million bales, I think, or 6 million bales, really, 9 times since in the last 50 years. So 7.1 million bales is fairly significant. Total production around the world this year, looking for about an increase of about 4 million acres. I don't see that big of an increase in Brazil, but maybe there will be. The big increase in harvested acreage, of course, is going to come from Texas. If you've got a 10% abandonment instead of 42% abandonment, you're going to add a lot of harvested acres to the world numbers. So Texas up 2.5 million acres, other states up 400,000, and all foreign countries up about 1.1 million acres. So foreign area up about 1.5% as we go forward. World cotton yields, I'm projecting at 685 pounds. You know, really, Gerald? That bad? It could be better. The tendency, sort of like consumption, is once yields go above trend or they go below trend, they're going to stay there, and not for just 1 or 2 years. We could be unchanged and still be below trend, but I'm foreseeing a little slight decline in world yields as we move forward. As such, a 123 million bale world crop this year. That's up about 5 million bales right now versus. You heard earlier a 10 million bale increase out of the USDA. You care to add anything, OA?
No, we need to roll.
Okay. Just so you know, for every 1 pound that I'm too low on this yield number, it adds about 200,000 bales to world production as we go forward. World consumption, I guess we'll follow trend. We don't know how bad the economy will take some sting out of this. People are already talking about China being down significantly on their consumption even this year, but for right now, projecting 127 million. Assuming all this is correct, world-ending stocks should drop down to about 69, and most of that drop, all of that drop would come. The increase in world stocks, or the decrease in world stocks, is all going to come out of foreign countries. The United States will be the only person who adds anything. So a lot of assumptions for 2019, a lot can go wrong. Didn't make any downward adjustments in world consumption. World yields for 2019 could certainly be way too conservative. Enough with all that mumbo jumbo. Low-way, let's start talking about prices.
Well, okay. Yeah, you pull that one up. You know, there's some very bullish things out there in the market that I like. And on the left-hand side of that screen, world production is down. World consumption is going to exceed world production. We've been on a pace that world consumption would be at a record level, and I guess some of the databases will still show that, but I'm thinking there will be adjustments and that will not come. I'm concerned about the European economy. I'm not concerned about the U.S. economy, despite what the news media tends to tell us that we're in a recession. I think we're actually all bulled up for the U.S. economy. But China is, and it's another reason why I think China digs its heels in, and they're going to be a lot tougher than we realize. China is suffering dearly. The tariff is actually hurting China, but they've dug in. They're trying to make a political statement with their own people. They have documented concentration camps, if you want to call it that, in Xinjiang. go back just a real quick bit of history. I hate to do that. The Xinjiang population is historically Muslim. The Chinese, it's always been called a semi-autonomous state, Xinjiang. They are not the Han Chinese. They're not even Chinese. But they are the majority population, or have been. China has now brought enough folks into Xinjiang to make the Chinese the primary population. But still, much of the power, much of the land control is still in the Uyghurs. The Uyghurs, if I can call it that. It's a little bit of a mispronunciation. But they have created formal re-education centers. And in those re-education centers, cotton production, cotton textile activity is a major component. They've shifted, they're still shifting much of their major textile activity to Xinjiang. And much of that is now under what would be called child labor, prison labor, forced labor, slave labor, whatever. And it's now drawn the attention of the international community, and the Chinese now are finally having to answer questions about products being made by, quote unquote, for lack of the word we want to use, but the word they're using, made by slave labor. You can't bring anything like that into the United States, and Customs now has a formal view of that, and they're looking into it. And I don't know what's going to happen, but what we're seeing, lower world stocks, China stocks are reduced, and that's significant. The Indian crop disaster that we've attempted to identify, with the Indian stocks being lower, they're going to import U.S. cotton. Trade flows are going to be impacted because of India. India's going to buy cotton from all over the world, not just the U.S. As the trade flow changes, I mentioned they would change with respect to Pakistan. There'll probably be some trade flows impacted with cotton purchased by China to come out of India that's not going to get there. But as we've also talked about, while we've got this big crop, we've got some significant quality issues. Still a lot of crop in the field. We've got a lot of bark issues. And grade issues. Now, just those bullish factors in and of themselves would make me 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100 very bullish for the market. But we turn around and look at the U.S.-China trade war, which there's no risk involved, but there's total uncertainty. Turkey and China are mostly closed to U.S. cotton. That's the real killer. It's not what the price is. It's not where a merchant can sell cotton to based on price. It's where can we find a market for U.S. cotton now because of the China-Turkish, not our two major, but let's say two of our four major purchases, and we can't get in there right now. China's economy, I mentioned, is slowing drastically. The European economy is slowing. The Brazilian crop area expansion is going to play a big, much larger role than we have thought of to this day. Gerald? Well, one more. I noticed it real quick. Again, we had forgotten about polyester because polyester had gotten to 73 cents a pound. We had said, I know my good friend Ed said, the age of cheap polyester is over. And all this turmoil came back, and now polyester's down to 57 cents. That's another battle cotton's going to have to fight. We thought we'd whipped it for a while, but it's coming back.
The offset to that is Saudi Arabia announced that they were going to try to cut their production. They want to get oil prices up above $80 a barrel.
Right.
They'd like to get it up to 95. You start talking about a world economy is kind of slowing down a little bit. You know, you look at the U.S. accounts for about 24% of the world GDP, China 15%, and all the green up there, the European Union, that's another 24%. So you've got a significant amount of the world economy slowing down here a little bit. This daily chart on the December, you know, short term, looks like December's trying to put a bottom in here. Not sure if it's going to be successful or not. But if we look at this, is a December daily continuous. So one December just leads into another December. There's very good support between 66 and 68 cents. Obviously, there's always resistance between 75 and 78 cents. So I think we're going to be spending a lot of time, quite frankly, between about 70 and 75 cents until we get a better picture of how. Until we get a picture of number one, the trade talks, the weather, what people are ultimately going to do, and Would you disagree with any of that?
Short-term, Gerald, and you can take the last comment after this one if you want it. Short-term, we are probably okay. We can get up to 75 cents. I don't see us going above 78. I don't see us going to 78. The near-term in this market is where any strength is going to lie. As we get toward the production season, as we get to the National Cotton Council's planting estimate, about the second week or first week in February, and then as we get to the March 31 plantings report, if it's where we think it is, it comes down a bit. If it's where the Cotton Gourd report is what they picked up, then we've got a chance to get December 19 back up into the upper 70s. I don't see 80 cent cotton anywhere. Bottom line, and again, in my opinion, the significant thing is we better be extremely careful with what's going on in Brazil and China. Thank you.
Just to end it with, I'm sorry. I saw this paper, microplastic ingestion ubiquitous in marine turtles, and I thought, you know what? I don't know that we as an industry do enough to try to disparage the polyester, the synthetic fibers out there enough. You know, we always get picked on because of the chemicals that we use on the crop or not, or too much water being used, however it is. But, you know, this is a real problem out there. It was very fascinating. I saw an advertisement on television this morning for some group called 4Ocean. They go out and pick up ocean or plastic in the ocean. But anyway, more stories like this need to get out to all the greenies out there, especially if you're a greenie, and the conservation types, and maybe we can start reversing some of this trend on synthetic production. And that would be the end of our talk today. Thank you.
My dog likes to eat greenies. We're over time, just a few minutes, so I don't want to cut into your lunch hour, but if you do have a couple of quick questions, we can take maybe one or two before we adjourn. Anything? Okay, John?
Increase the tariff from 10 to 25% on an additional $200 billion.
And did that not include the Chinese tariff? That was my question. I had a dim memory that it did.
John, I don't actually remember that one way or the other. The point being, we're in day 40 now of that 90-day freeze.
It's not in place.
Okay. Well, I understand. We're in day 40 of that 90-day freeze. That 90-day freeze, according to the U.S. press release, include the purchase of cotton and soybeans. They purchased 180,000 tons of soybeans. They bought no cotton. The Chinese do not have a word for yes or no. Their only word is maybe. And that's what we took to mean that they would buy that stuff. What's going to happen?
We're getting fact-checked.
I know it. Well, they're economists. What do they know?
All right. Well, thank you all so much for attending the Outlook session this morning. Thank you to the speakers who did such a great job.